Hillary Burton opened up about why she left One Tree Hill in 2009. Dax Shepard revealed how he and Kristen Bell talk about sex with their daughters. And we're talking with the Wall Street Journal's Julie Jargon about how teen girls are developing physical ailments after watching TikToks.
It's October 27th, 2021.
Hey friends, I'm Casey Rackham.
And I'm Shyla Watson. Welcome to BuzzFeed Daily.
Well, Shyla, I don't usually want to talk about BJ Novak, but I am today because I think this is so freaking funny. Okay, so apparently, so he used to do some stock modeling, you know, many, many actors have. And, but apparently somehow on accident, like years ago, these photos got put on a public domain site. And so now he's literally the face of like men's razors, a Nordic cologne, face paint, etc. And so he talked about it on Instagram yesterday and he was just like, I'm too amused by this to do anything about it. So, you know, I like that response, to be honest.
Yes, I really do. Like, I don't know if I would feel the same, but I'm glad that people like he's having fun with it. It reminds me of Simu Liu and like his Getty
exactly.
photos. And it's just like all in stride. I love it.
All right. So moving on. On the latest episode of their podcast, Drama Queens, which is about One Tree Hill, stars Hillary Burton, Sophia Bush, and Bethany Joy Lenz reunited with their former co-star, Moira Kelly, for the first time in years. After Hillary asked Moira if there was anything she'd have done differently during her time on the show, she said she wished she'd have been more present and recognized the abuse the young women were allegedly enduring.
You know, hearing, honestly, what all of you young women had to go through, I don't want to get choked up. If I could go back, I would have made my presence stronger there. And I felt like, you know, being somewhat of a veteran, you were also very young coming into this situation. There's a part of me that feels like I let you all down.
Oh my God, Moira, no.
Hillary went on to tearfully tell Moira she was the one who helped her decide to finally leave the show in 2009, adding, quote, "You just set such a positive example for us and you were safe. You didn't have to put any extra effort into it."
This is like, I mean, I know it's probably very off brand. I've never seen One Tree Hill, but everything that I've learned about the show the past year has been very scary. And I love that the cast members have found a safe space to talk about things, their own podcast, and they're having someone that was, like she said, they like was safe and being able to reflect on what happened in a safe way and sort of, I don't want to say thank you, but like acknowledge what Moira did.
And, you know, I think, you know, like you said, they've been talking about this a lot this past year, especially on the podcast where they've been talking about, like, you know, the alleged abuse they received from their showrunner. And it's absolutely awful. And it's so sad that Moira, it's so relatable, but it's so sad that she feels like she feels sorry, like she should have done more. And it's like, no, Moira, it's not on you. Mm-hmm. She previously said, you know, she worked the show like a 9-to-5 job because she had a family that she'd go back to. And, you know, these girls didn't yet. And it wasn't on her. I'm glad that, yeah, again, that she's a safe space then and now. But, oh, an awful situation.
It really is. Okay, so I want to pivot a little bit, and I want to talk about Dax Shepard, who just opened up about the, quote, ingenious way Kristen Bell explained sex to their daughters. In an episode of his podcast, Armchair Expert, he said,
"When she describes sex to our children, she says, and then the woman takes the man's penis and puts it in her vagina. So right away, it's like, you're in charge of this,
right.
And you will decide to put this in your vagina, not the man puts his penis in your vagina."
He also said he doesn't subscribe to the trope of dads having to, quote, "protect my daughter's virginity with great prejudice if necessary."
I love all of this so much.
Yes.
Absolutely so much. One, love how Kristen Bell is saying it because, you know, oh God, we don't need to be talking about deflowering or like how a man.
No.
Yeah, we shouldn't be saying lose your virginity for women, you know?
Because it's a construct.
Yep. But I also love so much what Dax is saying about, you know, not protecting their daughter's virginity. Because, yeah, how much do you hate those, like, photos that happen every time around, like, prom season where it's a guy posing next to his daughter and her boyfriend with a gun?
God,
and I'm
yes.
like, my God.
God. And, you know, something else that I really like about this is that they used, like, correct terms and, like medical terms to talk about
right.
You know, like, it wasn't like, you know, you're coming up with some weird, like, oh, pee-pee or, like, whatever, like, you know, silly terms. Like, you're just calling them what they are. And I think that, like, doing that early on is just, it normalizes it, you know?
It does. Oh, thank you, Dax. Again, not something I often say, but thank you.
So true. Okay, so look, we all know that social media is bad for our mental health. Doesn't stop me, but anyway, as time passes, there seems to be more and more data pouring in about just how damaging these platforms can be on our brains. Well, I truly hate to be the bearer of worse news, but now it seems like social media can even affect our physical health too. Today, we're talking with the Wall Street Journal's Julie Jargon about some of the newest revelations regarding social media's impact on our health. Hi, Julie.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So you wrote a piece for the Wall Street Journal about how teenage girls have been developing physical tics at record rates since the beginning of the pandemic. At first, doctors were stumped, but then they realized that the girls all had something in common. What was it that they discovered?
The doctors discovered, after a number of girls showed up in doctors' offices across the country and even in other countries, that they were exhibiting the same types of tics as one another. And a lot of them were explaining to the doctors and showing them on their phones that they were watching TikTok videos of people on TikTok displaying tics, saying that they have Tourette syndrome and other issues that cause tics. And so doctors started putting two and two together and realizing that the tics that these girls in their offices were showing were not only similar to one another, but very similar to the tics that people on TikTok were displaying.
Now, to be fair, not all the doctors agree that TikTok is solely to blame. So what are some of the other factors that can contribute to tics?
Yeah, there's been, you know, obviously a lot of stress and anxiety related to the pandemic. And, you know, anytime there's high levels of anxiety and depression, those kinds of underlying conditions can cause things like tics. And that's what some doctors are saying. It might be, you know, more to do with that. But a lot of the doctors who have seen these girls with tics that are similar to those seen on TikTok, they also have underlying anxiety and depression and other mental health issues that were either brought on by or exacerbated by the pandemic.
And, you know, you spoke to neurologist Dr. Donald Gilbert, who said the tics are real symptoms of functional neurological disorders, meaning they're not just in someone's head. Could you just explain how these TikToks contribute to these tics?
Yeah, as it was explained to me by Dr. Gilbert and others, that sometimes when someone has psychological stress that they're under, that stress can manifest in physical ways. And sometimes it manifests in ways that patients have seen before. And Dr. Gilbert mentioned that he has seen patients in the past who had non-epileptic seizures. And many of those patients had actually witnessed family members who had epilepsy and had seizures. So sometimes what he described it as a disease model, where, you know, someone has seen a particular type of disease and how it looks and ends up sort of subconsciously modeling that when they're under some sort of psychological distress.
And, you know, his prescription for unlearning the tics includes cognitive behavioral therapy and taking a break from TikTok for several weeks. I mean, we all know that social media is bad for us, but were you surprised to see a doctor recommending this as a medical opinion?
I was surprised when he told me that that was the first thing he recommends these patients do. I had not heard of that being a recommendation for other issues related to social media use before. So I thought that was interesting that he said to step away from that, stop seeing something that might be triggering for people.
So something I found very interesting was the story of Kayla Johnson, a 17-year-old from Texas. Kayla had been previously diagnosed with ADHD and went to YouTube and TikTok to try and find coping mechanisms for schoolwork from other teens with ADHD. And this led her to the tic videos, and she eventually developed her own tics. Is this another good example of how social media algorithms can do more harm than good?
Yeah, you know, she was not looking for tic videos. That was not what she was hoping to find. And what she was hoping to find were videos from other kids like her who were struggling in a remote school and struggling with organization and time management. And so she went to YouTube and instead of, well, she found those videos, but in addition, she also was served up TikTok compilation videos of people who had ADHD and tics or anxiety and tics. And she started seeing, you know, a lot of those videos that she didn't set out to find.
All right. Well, we'll be right back with more from Julie Jargon. Welcome back. We're talking with the Wall Street Journal's Julie Jargon. So this isn't the first time a cluster of tick-like disorders has appeared at the same time. You mentioned a famous case from upstate New York where several teens developed tics that were eventually diagnosed as a mass psychogenic illness, but were mostly confined to a geographic location. I mean, this is pretty terrifying considering that social media draws people into these shared communities. So can you explain a little bit about how this case evolved? And also, do you foresee more cases like this happening unless there's some sort of change to social media?
You know, yeah, it's really interesting that there have been cases like this in the past, not only in upstate New York, but other places. And they were always, you know, one school or one community where oftentimes it was teenage girls that developed kind of the same sort of symptoms as one another. And this is the first time that doctors have said they've noticed this happening on a very mass scale because of the reach of social media and people being exposed to the same content around the same time. Could this happen again? You know, I suppose it could. It's still, you know, these videos are still there. Doctors have told me that they're continuing to see patients coming in with tics. It hasn't stopped. And whether there could be some other type of behavioral sort of physical manifestation of a stressor that might be witnessed on social media, it's hard to say whether we could see something quite like this again. But I mean, clearly you're seeing, you know, a lot of young people that have been dealing with eating disorders and other mental illnesses and other psychological effects that could be attributed at least in part to what they're seeing and being exposed to on social media. So I don't think that's going to go away.
And I mean, this all feels very overwhelming and kind of unsolvable. And I guess it just comes with the territory of having new technology and slowly discovering its effect on humans. I think you touched on this a little bit before, but what were some of the most helpful things you learned in writing this piece?
Well, you know, some of the doctors have said that just being able to tell these young people that they are in control of this and they can learn to sort of unlearn this behavior, that has been helpful to a lot of the patients. Some doctors have told me that, you know, almost, not always immediately, but sometimes immediately, patients, once they were given a firm diagnosis and told, you know, we understand you're not faking this, you're not making this up, but you do have the ability to have some control over it, that has really helped a lot of patients resolve the tics. And just using the cognitive behavioral techniques to learn what triggers episodes of tics and how to kind of fight against that, that I know has helped Kayla kind of reduce the number and severity of the tics. You know, maintaining a normal routine was another thing that the doctor said is helpful, that, you know, a lot of times when these kids have tics and they have an episode at school, it can feel really embarrassing, it can be disturbing and distressful, and they might, you know, go to the nurse's office and go home for the day. But having that disruption and those transitions can bring on tics. And so the better thing to do is just go about your daily life, maintain your routine, don't have those disruptions and transitions if possible.
So, I mean, just to wrap up, I'm curious, did writing this piece change your own social media habits?
I'm pretty careful in my social media habits, I will say. I definitely can go down some rabbit holes like anyone can. But I will say that, you know, I have three kids and they're ages 6, 9, and 11, so they're not, you know, they're not really on social media per se in terms of having their own accounts, but, you know, they do watch YouTube. And so I've kind of tried to use this as a cautionary tale to help explain to them that they really need to be careful about what they're seeing and the content they're watching. And I've had many discussions with them over the years about being aware that, you know, the information you might be seeing online isn't always credible, to try to fact check things when you can. But this definitely, I definitely caution them to not go looking for these kind of videos because they were interested in learning about what I was writing about. And I didn't want them to go and search up these kind of videos and have any sort of problems from it. So, you know, and I watched a lot of these videos in the course of reporting this because I you know, obviously had to see what it was all about. And I was a little bit worried about whether that would have a negative impact on me. So I tried to cut it off after a little while. But, you know, to your earlier point about the algorithm serving up more and more videos, you know, it's especially on TikTok, it's just one video after another, after another, after another. It's hard to just kind of turn it off and set it aside.
Well, Julie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for your interest in this.
That's it for today. Come back and join us tomorrow.
And remember, virginity is a social construct. And while we're on that subject, almost everything's a social construct.
So true. So true, Casey. Be sure to subscribe to BuzzFeed Daily on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you go for your podcasts.
And please take the time to leave us a rating and a review. It helps us figure out what you like about the show versus what you love about the show. And remember to come back for more of the biggest stories on BuzzFeed, coming to you daily.